Thank you for joining me. I'm Kimberly Rogers, and you're listening to this week's Torah portion from Friday sundown to Saturday sundown. This message is brought to you by themessianicmessage.com. themessianicmessage.com. I hope that you enjoy this teaching. This week's Torah portion is called Ki Tavo. It means when you enter in. It is Deuteronomy chapter 26 from verse 1 to chapter 29 verse 9, Isaiah chapter 60 verses 1 to 22, and Acts chapter 7 verses 30 to 36. Let's say a word of prayer before we get started. Baruch atah Yehovah Eloheinu melech haolam. Blessed are you, O Lord our God, King of the universe. You are the creator of all things, and Abraham's father, Isaac's father, Jacob's father. And Abba, I thank you and praise you that you are the creator of your nation, Israel. I thank you for including us in your nation, Israel, and I pray that we will understand about the blessings and the curses. I ask that you keep your hand on all your people wherever they are on the planet as they keep your Shabbat. I ask in the name of Yeshua. Amen. All right. Ki Tavo, when you enter in, let's start at Deuteronomy 26, verse 1. And it shall be when you are come in unto the land which the Lord your God gives you for an inheritance, and possess it, and dwell therein, that you shall take of the first of all the fruit of the earth, which you shall bring of your land, that the Lord your God gives you, and shall put it in a basket, and shall go to the place which the Lord your God shall choose to place his name there. Do you see that what we own, what we inherit, what we possess, and what we dwell in, there is something that the Lord gives us? It is a gift to us, going to the promised land and being able to live there and possess that. He gives it to us out of the goodness of his heart and for to uphold the blessings that he promised to Abraham. It's important for us to remember this, because when somebody gives you something, you owe them something back. And we're going to talk a little bit about that in just a minute. But first, we're going to ask this question. What are the first fruit offerings all about? Well, first of all, they are a reminder to us of our status before the Lord, before Yehovah. And so, what do I mean by that? Well, the first fruits are what we are. We're called that. Yeshua is the first fruit. The first fruit, right? But he is bringing other first fruits. But more than that, the first fruits are connected to the resurrection. The first fruit celebration is connected to, actually, the first resurrection. It's connected to the first resurrection in a way that it's not connected to the second resurrection. It's a great blessing to be in the first resurrection. Now, why do I say it's connected to the first resurrection? Well, if we go to Revelation chapter 20, verse 5, and I'm reading now from the Contemporary English Version, it says, "These people are the first to be raised to life, and they are especially blessed and holy. The second death has no power over them. They will be priests for God and Yeshua, and will rule with them for 1,000 years. No other dead people were raised to life until 1,000 years later." This first group of people that are resurrected are related to the first fruits, you see? There are going to be those in the second resurrection at the end of the millennial kingdom who get into the kingdom, but they are not included in this first fruit group. You know, they don't have the blessing of being set apart, of being holy, and being a service priesthood to Yeshua during the millennium. If they're, you know, there's just only one way to say this, really. If you're not in that first group, you've missed your opportunity. So that's the one that you want to be in. You want to strive for that one. That's, you know, Paul talks about winning the race. Well, there you go. The goal is to be in the first resurrection, not in the second resurrection. And I don't have time to go into the differences between the first and the second resurrection. All I'm talking about here now is how the first fruits relate to the first resurrection, you see. We also know that Yeshua is the first fruit, but we are going to be like him. That's why it also connects us to the first resurrection. Because as Yeshua being the first fruit, we will be like him. And so he will be the high priest who offers us, you know, to the Lord. He will wave us before the Lord as the first fruits, you see. And so that's why being in this first fruit resurrection is going to be very special. And by the way, it is a very special thing to be called by the Lord. You know, Romans chapter 9, starting at verse 24, says, "Even us, whom he has called, not of the Jews only, but also of the Gentiles." As he says also in OC, or Hosea, you know, he's talking there about the book of Hosea, so it's a kind of an end-time prophecy thing. "I will call them my people, which were not my people, and her beloved, which was not beloved." You see, in Hosea, the Lord told Hosea to name his child Lo-Ami, not my people, and he cut the house of Israel off. Well, we've been called not my people, but he's going to take his people out from among the Gentiles and call them my people, which were not my people. See, that's our title. We are his people, which were not his people. And so we are an end time fulfillment that has had a process of being fulfilled from the time that Yeshua died and resurrected so that we could be brought back into the covenant, you see. Verse 26, "And it shall come to pass that in the place where it was said to them, you are not my people, there shall they be called the children of the living God." Isaiah also cries concerning Israel, "Though the number of the children of Israel be as the sand of the sea, a remnant shall be saved. For he will finish the work and cut it short in righteousness, because a short work will the Lord make upon the earth." Remember, the end of days is, you know, what Yeshua said about it is that the days would be shortened. This is an end time prophecy about the end time remnant. "The number of the children of Israel are as the sand of the sea, but out of them a remnant shall be saved." Now, those in the first resurrection who have been dead will qualify to be first fruits, along with those who go through the tribulation and don't actually make it into the grave. They don't have to be resurrected from graves. So we need to make this connection between first fruits and Yeshua, and first fruits and us, and first fruits and resurrection. Now, the Lord is very specific about how to offer the first fruits. In Deuteronomy 26, starting at verse 3, he says, "And you shall go to the priest that shall be in those days, and say to him, I profess this day that the Lord your God, unto the Lord your God, that I am come to the country which the Lord swore to our fathers for to give us. And the priest shall take the basket out of your hand and set it down before the altar of the Lord your God. And you shall speak and say before the Lord your God, a Syrian ready to perish was my father." That he's talking about Abraham there. "And he went down to Egypt and sojourned there with a few, and became there a nation great, mighty, and populous. And the Egyptians evil entreated us, and afflicted us, and laid upon us hard bondage. And when we cried to the Lord God of our fathers, the Lord heard our voice, and looked on our affliction, and our labor, and our oppression. And the Lord brought us forth out of Egypt with a mighty hand, and with an outstretched arm, and with great terribleness, and with signs and wonders. And he has brought us to this place, and has given us this land, even a land that flows with milk and honey. And now, behold, I have brought the first fruits of the land which you, O Lord, has given me. And you shall set it before the Lord your God, and worship before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice in every good thing which the Lord your God has given to you and to your house, you and the Levite and the stranger that is among you. You know, those people who are not really in the culture yet, but they do live among you. And so here we see that the Lord is renewing vows. You know, when we go into the land, we're going to take vows. And so, aside from the specifics of how to do this, first fruits is also about gratitude and remembering our roots. Now, for you and I, our roots go back 4,000 years, and you know, by now we should be part of a very good and strong tree, you see. Now, some people, like say 2,000 years ago, you know, their roots didn't go back that far. And so their roots went back 2,000 years. You and I at the end are the most blessed people of all to have 4,000 years of root growth, you see. Now, when we do this ritual, we are vowing to the Lord that we reaffirm our descendancy from Abraham and from the and in within the covenants that we are required to adhere to. Yod Heh Vav Heh Yehovah asks us to remember our history at each festival, actually. And when we bring our first fruits, we're doing that. We're remembering our history, and when we tithe, we are remembering our history. So first fruits is also about gratitude. Part of this, what we're supposed to say here in this ritual of bringing our first fruits is to remember Abraham and how the Lord has fulfilled all his promises that were made to Abraham's descendants. And, you know, this should be a source of great joy. Not just, you know, well, thank you, but great joy, a time of celebration at first fruits. When we bring this in, we make this, this is a kind of a solemn vow. It's saying, listen here, Lord, I am a part of this lineage of Abraham. By the way, if you're not willing to go and vow to the Lord and profess to the Lord, there, as it says in verse 3, that you are come to the country which the Lord swore to our fathers to give us, if you're not willing to acknowledge that you're in that line, guess what? You don't belong in the land. Now, first fruits then is about remembering Yeshua, remembering our ties as first fruits that Yeshua will, you know, present to the Lord, remembering our coming resurrection, and that we have roots going back a long way. And then there are the three tithes. Now, in this Torah portion where we only learn about one, but let's go back to Numbers 18, verse 21. It says, and behold, I have given the children of Levi all the tenth in Israel for an inheritance and for their service which they serve, the service of the tabernacle of the congregation. That's the first tithe. Deuteronomy chapter 14, verses 22 and 23, you shall truly tithe all the increase of your seed that the field brings forth year by year, and you shall eat before the Lord your God in the place which he shall choose to place his name there, the tithe of your corn, of your wine, of your oil, and the firstlings of your herds and of your flocks, that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. This is when we're supposed to do the pilgrimage feasts. We have kept our tithe, and we use that tithe to fund going to Jerusalem, and we live off of that tithe, whatever, the, you know, that it, of our fields, it says corn, but, you know, it's the principle is that whatever you've grown of your crops, your wine, your oil, and your herds and flocks, that is for your consumption, this tithe. But it's not for your consumption in your house. It's for your consumption in Jerusalem. Now, we already, some of us are already doing this second tithe to help us go to Sukkot and to do Passover and to, you know, go wherever we need to go to celebrate the feast because, you know, we are out here in exile. There's no temple in Jerusalem for us to go to, so it doesn't really make sense for us to go there. But we are wanting to do all these things with all of our heart before the Lord so that He will turn His face back to us. So we do this second tithe and we use it for travel and for food and for helping our brethren to get there and to whatever needs are required for keeping the feasts, even out here in exile. And then there's this third tithe, which is in this week's Torah portion, Kitavo. And this starts in Deuteronomy chapter 26, verse 12. When you have made an end of tithing all the tithes of your increase the third year, which is the year of tithing or the year of this tithe, and you have given it to the Levite, the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, that you may eat within your gates and be filled. So in that third year, you bring this third additional tithe along with tithe number one, and you are using tithe number two to get there so that you can give your tithe to the Levite, and you can eat within the gates and be filled and be joyful at the time when you go to Jerusalem. Then you shall say before the Lord your God, I have brought away the hallowed things of my house. In other words, the things that I have set aside for 3 years, I'm now bringing them. I haven't used them. I've brought them out of there, my house, and I have given them to the Levite and to the stranger and to the fatherless and to the widow, according to all the commandments which you commanded me. I have not transgressed my commandments, neither have I forgotten them. I have not eaten thereof in my mourning, neither have I taken away any thereof for any unclean use, nor given any thereof for the dead, but I have hearkened to the voice of the Lord my God, and have done according to all that you have commanded me. Look down from your holy habitation, from heaven, and bless your people Israel, and the land which you have given us, as you swore to our fathers, a land that flows with milk and honey. This day the Lord your God has commanded you to do these statutes and judgments. You shall therefore keep and do them with all your heart and with all your soul. You have avouched or vowed to the Lord this day to be avouched or vowed that the Lord this day is your God, and to walk in His ways, and to keep His statutes and His commandments and His judgments, and to hearken to His voice. And the Lord has avouched or vowed you this day to be His peculiar people, as He has promised you, that you should keep all His commandments, and to make you high above all nations which He has made, in praise and in name and in honor, that you may be a holy people to the Lord your God, as He has spoken. You see, this is another way that the Lord shows the holiness and the blessedness of His law. The law that people want to do away with. They want to do away with these good things. And by the way, the tithe is not just merely a tenth. When you take it, you vow. You say to the Lord that I'm bringing this in order to show my obedience. You know, the Lord could have set up another commandment that said, well, you know, when you come in, you know, just stand there and, you know, say these words three times and then I'll know. No, He wants us to do the tithing because it's good for the Levites who don't have an inheritance. It's good for us who needs to go to Jerusalem or someplace to keep the feast while we're in exile. And it's good for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widows, you see, in order for the world to see that the Lord's way is the best way. So the Lord is specific about the declarations that you make when you bring your first fruits and when you bring your tithes. And by the way, when you announce, yes, announce to him in front of the priest who is a witness to you that you are announcing that you are allowing Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh-Yehovah to use you through your obedience to take care of these things, the Levite and your feast days and the stranger, the fatherless and the widow. You see, the Lord is concerned about these details, you see. Deuteronomy 27:1, and Moses with the elders of Israel commanded the people, saying, keep all the commandments which I command you this day. And it shall be on the day when you shall pass over Jordan to the land which the Lord your God gives you, that you shall set up great stones and plaster them with plaster, and you shall write upon them all the words of this law, when you are passed over, that you may go to the land which the Lord your God gives you, a land that flows with milk and honey, as the Lord God of your fathers has promised you. Have you noticed that this is the third time in this Torah portion that the land has been associated with milk and honey? Now, in ancient times, milk and honey were very valuable things. And so this land flows with value. Now, there's a lot more to this explanation of milk and honey. I understand that. But I want you to understand that he's saying here, this land that you're going to has great value. See? And so what he's doing here, he is setting up reminders for us. Reminders in the first fruits, reminders in the tithes, reminders in the plaster stone, in the stones that were plastered. And these are reminders, just like, you know, the tzitzit. Those are reminders for us. We are to wear them. The tefillin on our wrist and our headbands. The Sabbath, you know, that's a weekly reminder. The feasts, those are annual reminders. You know, I'm beginning to think that the Lord is big on reminders. What is the deal with reminders? Well, you know, it's because humans find it very easy to forget things. And so, another thing that the Lord is big on is rejoicing when we are remembering. Deuteronomy 27:5. And there shall you build an altar to the Lord your God, an altar of stones. You shall not lift up any iron tool upon them. You shall build the altar of the Lord your God of whole stones, and you shall offer burnt offerings thereon to the Lord your God. And you shall offer peace offerings, and shall eat there, and rejoice before the Lord your God. See, this is the second time now. He says, when you go to Jerusalem three times a year and you bring your food and everything, you're supposed to rejoice before him. And now they're told that when they enter the land, and I believe this is going to be a two-time thing. It was a one-time thing when they entered the land there with Joshua that you know, they set up the stones and they rejoice there and eat there. I don't know that there will be an altar there, because we're told later that, you know, that later on there will be a place where the Lord's going to put his name, and that's where you have your altar. But this is a special altar, and let's not be confused here, because there are people who use this here to say, well, the Lord, you know, you can set up an altar anywhere. No, the Lord said, erect this altar here to commemorate going into the land. You're to rejoice there. And so we don't get to erect altars just, you know, anywhere we please, because later on he put his name on Jerusalem. And so that's where we do it. But I do believe that we will do something similar to this when we enter the land the second time, which is the permanent, it's going to be the permanent habitation of the land, the permanent occupation of the land by the Lord's people, Jehovah's people, that we will do something similar where we eat and rejoice before the Lord, you see? And so the Lord is big on reminders and rejoicing when we have our reminders. Now, there are even more reminders in Ki Tavo. Let's go to Deuteronomy 27:12. These shall stand upon Mount Gerizim to bless the people when you are come over Jordan, Simeon and Levi and Judah and Issachar and Joseph and Benjamin. And these shall stand upon Mount Ebal to curse Reuben, Gad, Asher, Zebulun, Dan, and Naphtali. Now, I've in the past done teachings on why one group is on one side and one on the other. You can go to themessianicmessage.com and search on the Torah portions page and look for Kitavo, and you will find these other teachings there. But I want to take a look at Gerizim, okay? The word Gerizim. Gerizim is Strong's 1630. And it says there that it's the plural of an unused noun. The unused noun is garaz. Now, Gerizim means cut up or rocky, okay? And it says it's a mountain of Palestine, but it's not. It's a mountain of Israel. There is no such thing as Palestine, Mr. Strong. All right, but the root word of Gerizim is cut off. However, what the men do there on Mount Gerizim is they're standing on a cut up or rocky mountain. Now, there's some significance to that, and there's significance to the root word, which means to be cut off. And so the blessings are put on the mountain that's rocky and has to do with being cut off. Now, isn't that interesting? You see, I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a minute, but let's go on and talk about Ebal. Mount Ebal, it's Strong's 5858, and it says perhaps from an unused root, probably meaning to be bald or bare, you see. So, let me just go this direction. Yeshua said in Matthew 7:14, "Straight is the gate and narrow is the way which leads to life, and few there be that find it." By the way, when you choose blessings, you choose life. Remember in the book we just had this in the Torah portions where it says choose life, right? Choose blessings, choose life. Blessings lead to life, and few there be that find it. But straight is the gate and narrow is the way to those blessings. Listen. It is easy to fall away from the blessings. It's easy to be cut off and to be cursed or made a ball or made bare. Now, that word bare is not to be confused with barren. A ball has the connotation of having everything taken away from you, whereas barren means you don't have something that you should normally have, you know. And it's a reference to children, of course, in most instances. But barren is the Hebrew word akar, Strong 6135, and it means sterile. So, ebal, or bare, is not the same as akar, okay? So, really, what he's saying here is that on Mount Gerizim, you are on a rocky mountain. It's a straight and narrow path. And on the mountain of curse, Ebal, is where you get laid bare, you see? You understand now what I'm trying to get at? We get the blessings for obedience. And blessings are not for salvation. They are not for us to have any kind of bragging rights or to compare ourselves to others. We get blessings when we obey. We get salvation through Jehovah Yeshua, the Son. And we have never been given the right to brag or compare ourselves to others. That just doesn't come with getting the blessings. But more than that, what we get from obedience is found in Deuteronomy 28:10. It says, and all the people of the earth shall see that you are called by my name, the name of the Lord, and they shall be afraid of you. You see, this thing of blessings and curses, it's always still about the Lord and His name. When we choose blessings, we are not only choosing life, but we are upholding His name. When we choose blessings, we're upholding His name. You see, that's what we're called to do. We're called to shamar, to guard the commandments, and to uphold His name. We're called to choose those blessings over the curses, you see, because of His name. That's the most important thing. That, in fact, whatever we do in life, wherever we go, whatever our actions or our thoughts are, we should be asking ourselves, does what I'm doing or saying at this moment uphold the name of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh Yehovah? See, that's the most important thing. So curses are for disobedience, you see. Blessings are for obedience. Deuteronomy 28:47 says, because you served not the Lord your God with joyfulness and with gladness of heart for the abundance of all things. See, this is found here in the list of curses now. Curses are for disobedience. Blessings are for obedience. But in the list of the curses in Deuteronomy chapter 28, in the midst of all that list of curses, he said, because you have not served the Lord with joyfulness and gladness of heart. See, Kitavo might be boiled down to the reminders to be grateful. He says too, because he wants us to serve him with joyfulness and gladness of heart for the abundance of all things. By the way, if we are not grateful, and if we will not do the reminders that he tells us to do, our heart will fall away from him. Our hearts should be joyful and glad. By the way, joy is a gift of the Spirit, right? And that we find in the New Testament. But, here it is in the Old Testament. You know, when people say, well, that was a new thing that the Holy Spirit did there in the New Testament. Well, no, actually, it's always supposed to have been that way. That we're supposed to have joyfulness and gladness of heart for the abundance of all things. And he says, if you don't serve me that way, then you shall serve your enemies, which the Lord shall send against you, in hunger and in thirst and in nakedness. And in nakedness, that word there is a different Hebrew word than ebal, which is bare, but the connotation is the same, because when you're cursed, you get laid bare. And you will be in want of all things, and he shall put a yoke of iron upon your neck until he has destroyed you. Deuteronomy 29, verse 1 says, these are the words of the covenant which the Lord commanded Moses to make with the children of Israel in the land of Moab, beside the covenant which he made with them in Horeb. Okay, so here we have the explanation of what this covenant is. You know, some people argue about, well, is this the second giving of the law, or is this a different law that the, it says here, beside the covenant that he made with them in Horeb. Some of it is the same, some of it is different, and so we now understand that probably what this is in Deuteronomy is a renewal and a reminder. Probably the book of Deuteronomy could be called the book of reminders too, you know, just like Kitavo is, you know, the lesson of the reminders. And so the book of Deuteronomy, maybe we could think of it as, you know, having to do with reminders as well. Because it says here in verse 1 that the Lord made a covenant with the children of Israel in the land of Moab and at Horeb at Mount Sinai. Why would he make two different covenants, and why would one of them be kind of different? Well, Because the first one was given at Mount Sinai to a generation that no longer was alive. This second generation already knows that law that was given at Mount Sinai, but, you know, Moses is now in the book of Deuteronomy in the land of Moab with the children of Israel standing before him, elaborating, adding some understanding to what was given at Mount Sinai. That's why. So it mostly has to do with the two different generations. See, that generation the first time didn't get to go into the land, but this generation is going into the land, and there are some very specific things regarding the land. And so they need to have a more elaborate instruction as they get ready to cross the Jordan. So the greatest blessing that we can have is to be able to say that we are walking in the obedience of the covenants, right? And that means the covenant of Abraham, the covenant of Moses, this renewed covenant here in the land of Moab before going over into Jordan. And then there have been some intervening covenants, the covenant of David, and again the renewed covenant where Yeshua died and resurrected so that you and I could be brought back into the covenant that we broke, all, you know, that one back there at Mount Sinai. The greatest blessing for us is to be able to say that we're walking in obedience to those covenants. Deuteronomy 29 verse 9 says, "Keep therefore the words of this covenant and do them, that you may prosper in all that you do." And I can't think of a better way to end this Torah portion than with that exhortation, which, by the way, is also a blessing, because if you keep the words of this covenant and you do them, you will prosper in all that you do. I hope this Torah portion has been a blessing to you. Shabbat Shalom.